Hello, and welcome to the Drama and Language Teaching Podcast. This is a podcast for teachers, practitioners, and researchers, and anyone else interested in the intersections between drama and theater and language teaching and learning. My name is Stephanie Giebert. I'm the host and producer of this podcast. Okay, welcome to the podcast. I'm glad you could make it. And as usual, I ask my guest first to introduce themselves briefly. So who are you? Where are you based? And what do you currently do?
Hi, Stephanie. Thank you so much for allowing me to be here. And my name is Paul Murray. My professional title is Paul Leonard Murray, because there's a few Paul Murrays out there, one of which is a great author who's just been awarded various things. But as my niece says to me, it's not you. So I have to use the Paul Leonard Murray in order to clarify the difference. I'm from England originally, and I've been now based in Serbia for nearly 20 years. So I live in Belgrade in Serbia. I started acting when I was in primary school, and I always felt there was something very special about it, something different that I was attracted to. And I ended up doing a training as an actor and got a degree in acting and dramaturgy. And then I carried on my career as an actor, and I still do that on TV and on the stage. But parallel to that, I've really had a passion for, I mean, workshops as a form, I suppose, drama workshops, and those happening outside of theatres and outside of the kind of classical theatre context. So that's taken me.
I can come in here for a second, when and where did you start with these workshops?
I started, I went to a college called Bretton Hall, which was in the north of England, and it closed quite a few years ago. It's part of Leeds University. It was a wonderful place where, and it was set up by, I can't remember the chap's name, but he was a very progressive educator from Yorkshire, and he was the Yorkshire drama advisor, I think, for a lot of time when those things still existed. And he wanted to create a place of education which was linked to its community, its surrounding communities. So part of what we were asked to do when we were students was to go out and do workshops in the community. And it's quite strange when I look back at it, because it was, you know, having been a professor in university, they just said to us, well, here are your placements, go and do a workshop.
Okay, so without any further explanation.
Nope, that was it. Yeah, they just sort of gave us a time and a place. And then when we started protesting to saying, well, I don't know anything about, you know, if they would send you to, you know, you'd go to a center for people experiencing homelessness, or to a hospital or a detention center for young people. And you say, well, I don't know anything about that. And they say, well, you know how to make theater, you know how to make drama. Okay. So figure it out. Couldn't do that nowadays, I don't think, but time, it was a big learning curve.
So a lot of improv skills probably required here.
Absolutely, yeah. And there was I think on all our part, I mean, one of the reasons that we happened to be at that place was this belief that drama does have a role to play in engaging people and engaging us in our wider communities, and that it can be used as a force for social development, social good, what have you. So I think we all went in there wanting to do that, and we, you know, through trial and error, we figured out whether we were any good at it.
And I kind of interrupted you here, wanting to know more about the workshops. So what was your further career, as an actor or also as an educator, I guess. You combine both, I think.
I loved being on stage. I loved and I loved doing street theatre. That was sort of my favorite thing, sort of clowning, physical theatre, street theatre. And that was very close to the workshop, as I can see, because especially if you're doing workshops kind of cold, then it's like standing on the street, and why should people engage with you? Why should people stop walking to the shops and stop and listen to you rambling on about something ridiculous? So I sort of felt that those two things, that's the places where the workshop and the theatre were the closest for me. And I just found in the workshop situation, it was still a performance. It was still a group performance. And my job was to engage everybody. That's kind of how I saw it. And, when you're, so that was one side of it. And then the other side of it, I think, was to give as many people as possible the opportunity to participate in drama activities. I felt very lucky. When we were at school, we had drama as part of the curriculum, was from when I was 14, and before that we had lots of drama activities and music and movement activities and all this kind of thing. And I just felt if I could pass as, give other people as many opportunities as I had, then that would be a useful thing to do. And particularly for those people who, had fallen foul of the social system, if you like. So people who were in institutions, and I became, so my workshop career, if you like, went along the path of I found myself accidentally working with some people who are called mental health survivors. And because they were just in the town where I lived, and someone knew I was acting, and they said, "Oh, well, these ladies would like to do some drama." So I started working with them, and I really became fascinated with the field of mental health and how people with mental illness are regarded and diagnosed and understood. And so that my sort of workshop path, the workshop career, took me down that road. So for about, I don't know, 10 years, I kind of went from, I worked as a freelancer in different locations, in different situations, institutions, working with adults and working with young people who with autism in a school for a while. So just as a freelance artist, workshop leader, doing various different projects on normally on a short-term basis.
And that was in the UK or
That was
worldwide?
it. In the UK mainly. I did some traveling around and some workshops in other places, but generally within the UK, yeah.
And so what brought you to Serbia?
Well, short answer is love. I met my wife at an event, one thing led to another. I got a gig in Belgrade. We'd met before, and I found myself keep coming back to Belgrade. And then eventually, I had a choice to make, or we had a choice to make, of whether to stay in England or whether to come here. And at that point, I was I'd studied. I'd done my MA in educational theatre at Warwick many years ago, and then I'd finished my PhD at University of Winchester. And I was working as a full-time professor, so I just got that job when the opportunity to move to Serbia occurred. And but it was an easy one, really. I think it would have been a greater risk to stay in England and wonder what had happened. So I just decided to come here.
And what kind of how did your career progress from there? So, doing English theater in Serbia, did you
Yep.
do that right away, or did you have to find your way first? What were the opportunities?
Well, Pretty much, I did it straight away because I had sort of when I came here, I had a pretty enough money to survive for about 6 months, and so I thought, well, I don't really want to leave it 6 months until I find something. And then it was actually my wife suggested, why don't you do youth theatre in English here? And I'd been working with the Children's Cultural Centre here. I've done some gigs here in the past when I before I'd moved here, which is the city-owned institution for cultural activities for children. And they'd offered me a few years before. They said, oh, if you ever want to come here, you can use the space. So I had a space which is in the center of the city, and I kicked that off. I moved here in the July, and I kicked that off in September, and just advertised it as English language theatre, youth theatre in English. And I got seven children in the first class, and that was 20 years ago, and we're still going
Wow.
with
Okay.
three teachers, and we have about 100 students at the moment, and we've had, so goodness knows how many we've had over the years, but they're all, when I meet them in the street now, the graduates, they're all very big. And but
Wow.
it's
Yeah.
a great way, it's a great way to get to know the city, and it's quite a different experience from what I was doing in England, in a sense. Not only because it doesn't have a particular focus, apart from, on the surface, its focus is theatre and English. But I think all my experiences of being an educator and working in, let's say, applied contexts within the UK means that, in my mind at least, it's never as simple as that in terms of, what we get up to and why.
So it can cover a range of forms, topics,
Yes. I think it's,
outcomes.
yeah, I think that for me, when you start, and for those people who've done a lot of workshop leading in different places, it's always, as I say, it's always been a comfortable thing for me to do. But, normally the project will last, a day, a week, a month, 3 months. And you can do all your good stuff. You can do all your stuff. You can be right on top form. You can be energetic, and then you go. You leave, and everyone says, "Wow, great! What a great guy!" And all the stuff he knows how to do. And then you do that. If you're doing that in one place, you do that, and it's Christmas, and then everyone comes back in January, and you go, "Oh God, I'm going to continue." So it changes the work a lot, and it changes the relationship with the students or the people in that room. And some of the students I've had for 10 years, so that's been a sort of fascinating journey for me.
And do you do public performances, or do you do like for parents and friends? How does it work?
Yeah, we say to the young people that they'll do one public performance per year, and that will be for, yeah, parents and friends, and we do excursions as well. So we go and visit. Most years we've gone to visit another, similar school or youth theatre to ours in different countries. So we've been to about 10 different countries, and we have good friends in lots of different places around Europe, which is wonderful for the young people, because obviously some of them, from being from Serbia, a lot of them haven't been to these places before, and people in these other places haven't met people from Serbia. So we have a good time. We have a good time doing that. And the performance, it's interesting. Coming from a theatre background, I think drama, I mean, these distinctions now between drama and theatre, I never really thought of it like that. I understand the distinctions, and I think they're important distinctions to make. But I think there has to be some kind of performance. I think it's not our biggest thing. I mean, we take anybody. We don't audition. If we have a space, we'll take people if they have an interest. doesn't matter on their level of English. It really doesn't matter at all. If they want to come, we'll take them, and if we have a space. So when you do the performances, sometimes we do quite sort of mainstream performances. Sometimes we improvise the performances. Sometimes we devise. But I think still that sort of adrenaline that comes with performance, that standing up on stage, is an element which I think is really important. And the children like to do, and it engages them, and it gives them a strong shared experience. So I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's certainly, I wouldn't say it was our focus, but it's something that I enjoy to do, and gives me nerves and keeps me on my toes as well. So I like that.
And what ages of students do you have? So from what's the youngest age, and how long do they usually stay with you?
The youngest at the moment are 7,
mm-hmm.
and the eldest are 19.
Okay, quite a range. Yeah, okay.
Quite a range, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I used to do them all myself. I used to have like 7 groups a week, and
wow.
Then we meet twice a week. But now I'm lucky enough to have 2 people working with me, Julia and Jana, and they we split share the groups between us.
Mm-hmm.
I think the longest anybody stayed is 12 years, I think.
Okay.
But generally they stay for a long time. That was my surprise at the beginning as well. I was expecting people to come for a year or two, but they like to come back, so
mm-hmm.
which is great.
Obviously there's something they find in it that makes them come back.
I think we're very relaxed, we're very playful. A lot of them will say that it's more like a therapy session than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
That they have a lot of pressure with, from schools, with exams,
mm-hmm.
and tests,
mm-hmm.
and so and so and so and so. And this is somewhere to come, which feels like a learning place, but is, more relaxed, and the emphasis on all the things that we try and do as good facilitators about, sharing, listening, the ethics, the values behind the work. Sometimes those children don't get to experience those things as an activity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think more and more, I don't know whether just in Serbia, but I'm sure it's wider, that children understand what these values are, but often they're being taught those things with methods which don't reflect those values.
Mm, okay.
So it may be a very sort of top-down way of explaining to children how they should be listening to each other. And that paradox, I think, is not lost on children.
Mm-hmm. And how can you integrate that in your theatre activities?
Well, I've always been a fan of devised theatre and improvisation,
mm-hmm.
and those rules of improvisation are, inherent in those rules are those values. So if you're saying that, the development of this story depends on everybody in the room, and if, for example, if we're doing the yes and game or something like that, then that demands that the person before you is listened to. And it demands that you value what they say by adding to it and not blocking it. So I like the fact that with drama, we have all these exercises which, and these games, which in order to be played successfully, those good things of, listening, appreciating, understanding each other are necessary.
Yeah.
And you can, and children, I think the desire to play, the desire to participate in these games, if these games are fun, then the children will understand, they will learn instinctively that there's a greater value of learning these things over and above just because the fact that they should, or it's a good thing to do. They actually feel the benefit of those things as, either they feel closer to the people they're working with, or the story that we're making is kind of more dynamic and more crazy because everybody's adding something to it. And, I think that when it goes well, the job of the facilitator, me, is just to step back and let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then think, does that And also, I'm working, we don't have a curriculum, so we just really follow what the children and I want to do.
And if you have kids as young as 7, how do you scaffold their English in some way, or how do you do? Because I guess they would have kind of a beginner's level of English, if at all. I don't know if primary school in Serbia has English at all as a subject.
Some do, some don't. Some are going to kind of private classes already, but a lot of young people here, there's no, all TV shows are in original language, so there's no dubbing of TV
I
shows.
see.
So children have an exposure to English from very early on. So it's in their ears, even if it's a passive knowledge. And also from computer games and from social networks. So, we get sometimes a parent will come with virtually no English, and the child is speaking to me in English, and I'm saying, well, where did you live before here? And they just said, well, just in Belgrade. And I said, well, how's this kid speaking English? Like, from computer is the answer.
Okay, I see.
And they and you know, or from songs or what have you. So. And normally that English is also learned through something that they just want to do, that they spend time doing on their own. So it's associated with, it's got a positive association in their minds. We do get kids whose English isn't very good. I've always, with them, it's really, I think with every group, it's, especially when I didn't have any Serbian when I first moved here, there was no, I've got a group of 7-year-olds who really don't speak much English, and I don't speak any Serbian. So what are you going to do? And so then your faith really is on the games, and really is on the non-verbal stuff. And again, it's quite, take it quite philosophically. You can spend 5 minutes thinking you've explained something, and then you say go, and everyone's doing something completely different and nothing to do with what you thought they were going to do. And then how do you react to that? Is that a thing of laughter, or do you see what's happening, like street theater? Do you see something going on in front of you, and you can say, well, I can fight it, or I can go with it? If I go with it, then maybe we're going to get somewhere together, which is kind of fun. And they understand as well that, then you become, hopefully, an example of a system of education where things go wrong, and I don't have a plan, and they are part of the plan kind of going forward. So I try to sort of stay in the moment as much as possible, and I've had a couple of really good mentors here. An old lady who worked for an NGO here, who threw me into a refugee center where nobody spoke any English at all, and there was no translators, and she just said, well, go. And I don't know, yeah, you just put your faith in the theater, I think, just in the drama, and just and people's desire to do things together, and to collaborate and cooperate. And I think that's always been for me a optimistic view of humanity.
Going from here, so you have a special interest in Shakespeare. So how what was the trajectory from your children's theater to Shakespeare?
I was never really, a huge fan of Shakespeare in a classical sense. I just, as I say, after you work for kids for 10 years, and then you're thinking, God, where's the material going to come from? I mean, undoubtedly Shakespeare is a very rich source of material, and it's about as theatrical as you can get. And one of my eldest groups was saying to me, can we have a go at Shakespeare? And because we meet each other 2.5 hours a week, sort of my heart sank, and I thought, no, I really, well, maybe we can find some fun way of doing it, because to do it 2.5 hours a week, I said, trust me, we're gonna kill each other if we try and do this. And I'd just been doing some Commedia dell'arte with them, I think, the year before, and we were working from you just find these little skits. One sentence: he comes in, she mistakes him for somebody else. They have an argument. He walks out. You get this sentence, and you can say to them, "Okay, improvise this sentence," and they improvise it. And then I thought, well, maybe we can do the same with Shakespeare. If they want to do Shakespeare, do you want to do? Yes, we do. Okay, well, maybe we can do the same. So then I found, I think, from *Midsummer Night's Dream*, sort of very short synopsis of each scenes. So then it was, he walks in with a wife. He explains something. They leave, and we were going through quite fast. I think we went through *Midsummer Night's Dream* first, like that, and they were experienced it very gently. And then, and it's a real laugh because, when you put it like that, and you take away the sort of grandiosity of like the language or the tradition, the stories are ridiculous. A lot of them are just ridiculous. So, and then they said to me, then a couple of things happened. I said, "Oh, why are we doing Midsummer Night's Dream?" I said, "Well, it's the most popular. It's the most popular, and people say it's the most successful." And they said, "What's the least popular then? Can we do the least popular one?"
Oh,
So then
okay.
you go. So then, of course, your question is, "Well, how do you judge that? What are you judging that
Yeah.
on?" And then they said, "Well, we'll just Google it. We'll Google it." And then they Googled popular plays Shakespeare, and at the bottom was Pericles. For one reason or another, but that so they said, "Can we do Pericles?" So we started doing Pericles, and I hadn't got a clue about Pericles. I don't think many people have.
Nope, me neither.
It's completely mad. It's a completely bonkers story. I mean, it's got everything in it, from incest to piracy to prostitution to, I mean, some really, near the
Well,
knuckle things.
mistaken identity as well.
The whole, yeah, everything, everything. So, as you kind of turn up and say, okay, this is this scene, they're looking at disbelief, I'm looking at disbelief. But they got very good at doing these short improvisations of each scene. And then one boy whose English was very good did his improvisation, included a rhyming couplet in the improvisation, something
One
very
that he
simple.
made up himself or that came from the original script?
Made up himself on the spot. So he just, and then he was like, "What are you doing here? I don't normally see you this time of year," something like that. And everybody laughed, like a lot. And it was quite a sort of a powerful thing, I don't know, in a strange kind of way. And then they were saying, "Well, it is Shakespeare, it is poetry. So we should do it in some kind of poetic form if we're going to do it." And then they looked at me and said, "Paul, can you write it like that for Monday? Like at least scene one."
That's okay, a tall order.
But with that group again, because I've known them for so long, it doesn't matter if what I wrote was rubbish, because they'll tell me. I'd written plays in collaboration with them before. They improvise, I go home. I transcribe what I think they did. I send it back to them, and then they tell me, "No, I didn't do it like that." And we were so I was kind of relaxed about writing with them, and so we started, and I did bring that back on Monday, and then, within 3 months, we had the whole show written and performed. So that's
Rhyming
how
couplets.
it all in rhyming couplets. I'll give you an example if you like, because it's.
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
This is kind of reflected. So this opening is, hopefully given the story I've just told, you'll get it. It's just a few lines. "You know the plays that Will did write: Macbeth, King Lear, Midsummer's Night, Othello, Hamlet, Much Ado. Well, these are but his favorite few. Plenty more are seldom seen, like Henry VIII and Cymbeline, but bottom of the all-time list of Shakespeare's not so greatest hits, the play which always fails to please, the poor unfortunate Pericles." So that's the tone, and then it goes through another 40 minutes of characters talking in rhyming couplets to each other and all
Okay.
this kind of stuff. Yeah, so that's how it started. And then the group seemed to enjoy it very much. They liked the fact that they're doing, a classic, but they liked the fact they're doing it in a humorous way. And the goal for me was, can I write the play following the same number of plot, the same plot, the same acts, the same scenes, so be really true to the original, and including the jokes. If it's supposed to be funny, try and make it funny, which isn't always the case with the originals because we don't understand them very well. So can I reflect the dynamic of the originals, and can I take my students along with me while I'm doing it? Can it remain this kind of shared experience? And I think with them it did. And then I've got, and then I ended up, I kind of got into it. COVID happened, and I enjoy writing a lot. And then I had, three just sitting on a file on my computer, and after sharing them around, I got them published by a publisher in America, a small publisher called Alphabet Publishing, who've been great. And then my, and now it's the process of, they've been performed in various places, and it's the first time as a writer, my work's been out there, and so that's a joy. That's quite a joy for me, and something new.
Yeah, so what were the reactions? I mean, I do adapt plays. I also write plays or devise plays with students, and I'm fairly relaxed as when it comes to sort of deviating from an original or something. But especially Shakespeare, I know there would be people who would say, well, if you take away the language, where is Shakespeare? Because he stole many of his plots himself. What's your argument in that?
I see that. I see that, and I, it's a huge passion for a lot of people, and the language is undoubtedly beautiful, and should be read and should be studied, but it shouldn't dissuade people from engaging with these wonderful stories either, and with the lessons that these plays have within them. And I think for me, and maybe a lot of people, even for me as an actor, when we were looking at Shakespeare, is introduced in schools in such a way that you just don't want to be doing it. It's an exam. I have to learn this. I don't know what it is. It's silly language. I don't get it, and I'm going to be tested on it. And then what a disservice, what a
Yeah, of
disservice
course.
to any kind
Kills the
of
joy.
dramaturgy. Exactly, kills the joy. So, in its relation to the originals, I'm hoping that this is, we're not in a competition here. This is, to create these stories, I had to read these plays for the first time, like properly. And then I get an understanding of the original language. Then I transpose that into rhyming couplets. And I hope that these open the door for students to kind of go the other way, to start here and then say, and then when you go back to the original, you go, oh, this is what a writer is like. It's not these silly Shakespeare things. This is, oh my God, this is incredible. So I hope they open the door for more people to experience the originals. And also, what I learned about Shakespeare at school, about the atmosphere of the theatres, and how they were very much part of popular culture, not, elite, took me back again to sort of street theatre times, where, anything goes, and it could be rowdy, bawdy, it could be rowdy, it can be, and to students, for young people, to perform in that way with the original language, it's a huge step. It's a huge step to be able to do that. To do it with this kind of language, it's much, much easier than for to do, so they can get a taste. And I've been, it's been intriguing to me. I've had, my publisher sent a couple to a review. There's a guy called David Crystal, who's an advisor of Shakespeare in language to the IRA, to the Royal Shakespeare Company, and one of the experts in the world. And his review was, included LOL in the review, saying, this is he wasn't precious at all. And he gets that, they can be accessible for children and for people who know the texts. It's a kind of a, silly summary. So hopefully it's not a competition between the originals and these. I mean, if it is, I'm gonna lose, but let's just hope we can, one can promote the other, I think.
And how's the reception so far? So what do you hear back from people who buy these scripts and do them with, I don't know, their drama groups, they're in
Yeah,
school? What do you know where people use your scripts?
I've got a very early on, there's an English theatre group in Moscow, and they just went mad for them. Martin at the they're called the Flying Bananas, and they do shows for kids and people, and they said, can we just perform these, because we just really like them. So they've been doing them, and they've been doing a great job. I've had school teachers use them in performance. Youth theatres use them in performance. I think it's, if you like your theatre sort of on the edge and poor and silly and of a certain spirit, you're going to like these. If you want to do something, but it's just like one small part of the range, of course. I think with teachers, I'm encouraging teachers to use them, and I've done a bit of work in that respect. I looked at for example, in in England, the curriculum for year 5 and 6, is encouraging young people to read the classics, to deal with poetry, to learn lines, to learn poetry, to work together. So, as a resource, my hope is that they will aid teachers in the classroom, which is. And be able to do it in a fun way. So, but the reception has been wonderful. I mean, I've been very happy with it. And but again, it's quite new to me. The idea of people knowing me through the language, and I imagine children listening to them and learning them and performing them in other places. The fun is in the imagining of that. I'd like to get as much feedback as possible from anybody who uses them, because they inform us going forwards.
And are they set in what the original settings, or are they modernized? So they're set in those whatever time the play is originally set in.
Yep, they're all in the original. They're all in the original. I mean, the references aren't. We in the Twelfth Night, there's a line about, is she waiting for a bus? But it's very random. It's not, there's no apology to make. I mean, I'm just trying to keep it in those times. And also, you have these kind of political and moral considerations, because, Shakespeare is full of these references which were historically specific, and they have to be, and the sort of the headline ones of those are about, his treatment of women, his treatment of people from other cultures. But a lot of people, are very sensitive about those issues, as they should be, and I think that we have an obligation to use these texts as a way of questioning and debating those things with our students, not necessarily by cutting them out, but also you have the non-headline ones, which is about the status of royalty. In so many of Shakespeare's play, the people of royal positions are sort of, as he had to, were unquestionably wise, some of them, not all of them, but we. They're there to be made fun of. He made fun of them. He played them as being mad and vulnerable and not qualified for the job they were supposed to do. So there's a lot of, I think if we get, I tried to go with the original because as the purist would probably agree with me, he covered most things. And I think that, at the beginning of Midsummer Night's Dream, I've spent so much time writing these things, so I can never, still can't remember the names of the characters. But she comes in chains. The queen comes in
Oh,
chains.
Hippolyta? Is it Hippolyta?
Bravo, bravo, bravo. Hippolyta comes in chains. And very often that's not in the original. And if you say, I think the line I've put is something like, you brought me from home and you keep me in chains. And then the students are reading that sort of like silly rhyming couplet. And then if they don't pick up on that on first reading, I was like, is that bothering anybody? Is she, why is she in chains? And then you have to figure, well, she's not a guest. She was captured from a war. Are we all right with that? And so it's a way of, so the line itself might be silly, but you can't, you can't perform these things without dealing with it, without dealing with the issues that underpin them. And also there's, things like, there's the Twelfth Night, which is what we're doing now, is very close, is set in Illyria, which is Korčula in Croatia. And that's very close to us, relatively close to us. So our plan with one group is to take Twelfth Night back to Illyria and perform it there in the open one day. So again,
Okay.
we're
Making these connections. Okay.
But it's a surprising, I mean, it's a surprising thing. I just, it's sort of taken a bit of a life of its own, and yeah, I didn't expect myself. Well, I didn't expect to find myself in Serbia, and I didn't find myself expect to find myself in, like, adapting these plays as being, part of my work. But yeah, here we are.
But one thing led to another,
Yep.
apparently.
Yeah, one thing led to another. Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't aware that Illyria was actually not just a fictional place. Okay, so I learned
Yeah,
something here.
nor was I. It says it in the, most of the guides say it's a fictional place, but no, it does. I've been there. It exists. I think one thing also about, which is about, your one of your specialisms about the learning English through theatre, is, I think that previous guests have spoken very well about process drama, about improvisation, about how this helps the learning of English. And that's something that in my sort of academic career, I never studied it. I've just done it with the children here. But I do enjoy when children learn a text in English and you're writing it for those children, those specific children, they're performing as English speakers, sort of a level above their English language knowledge, because they're learning, and that could be any play. They pick up a script, they learn one. I could be doing this in Serbian, and suddenly they're on stage with maybe 200 people watching them doing an English language monologue, and then someone might come and speak to them afterwards, and they don't understand because they only know this bit. But
Oh,
they,
yes.
but for that moment or for that 2 minutes, they are this knower of language. And, I've had in the younger groups early on, we had, 7-year-olds with no knowledge of English performing as English speakers, but they're just doing sort of gibberish English with a completely different persona than they have in their regular lives. So I think there's, not only is there something sort of quite magical about the drama, the play, the games with the language, but there's something magical about, the learning and the memorizing of text. It's not that they will ever use this text as it is in any part of their lives in the future, but the experience of feeling like that does offer them something quite special, I think.
Yeah,
I don't
that's always
know what you're.
interesting. I have I used to work with university students a lot, and one of my projects was actually to I did one or two I adapted one or two Shakespeare plays
Oh, really?
into modern business settings. So we did Merchant of Venice, for example, and I rewrote it as kind of stockbroker incurring problems with yeah, running into debt, so on. And what I did notice was that some of my students were business students, so they kind of got the jargon because I tried to put that in on purpose. So it was part of my idea, okay, just use more business vocabulary, that maybe it'll be easier for you to learn. But some of my students were language students, so they were studying English literature. So, and I think they knew the Shakespeare, but part of the time they said, "I have no idea what I'm saying." That was interesting. I thought, okay, yeah, maybe we should actually discuss this a little bit more, because they said, yeah, and they could perform. They were even kind of convincing. Sometimes they said, "I don't really know what I'm saying here." Yeah, so that was maybe not completely successful, at least not from the kind of language teaching intentions.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that it becomes a bit of a game, you know, because I think also when you have a group of, you know, 15, 16-year-olds, but who, I mean, whoever, there's also a you know, okay, they spend most of their time in school, or they spend most of their time in business, but they're spending most of their time in environments where being wrong or not knowing is not a good thing. So to you know, when you start off and you're doing a play reading, let's say that you're doing it sort of from scratch in a circle, and English is the second language of most, or third language of most people, and you say, you know, if anybody doesn't understand anything, just put your hand up, please. More or less, no one will do that. It's very rare, you know, that someone will say, actually, I don't understand this bit, because they shouldn't do that. You know, and it programmed in their mind is like, I don't understand this. I don't know. I'm going to keep quiet then. I don't look stupid. I don't want other people to think I don't know. But then, you know, over time, when you know, and of course, I like to include kind of word plays and things like that. So there's no way that they're going to know what that means. There's no way they're going to know what kvetch means. There's no way they're going to work out what this kind of little analogy is. So you can pick them up, but then as soon as one admits, you know, the house of cards hopefully falls, and then you can say, but that's another reflection of, I mean, human nature and educational system as well, of admitting that I don't know what I'm talking about.
And I mean, I think they got the main ideas, but with some of the business jargon, they said, I have no idea what I just said. But
Which
these
is
were the literature students, so they said, I don't know what it is, and I don't really care much about it. But yeah, so
That's great. That's great. I like that. I like
that was an interesting experience, but it was an interesting experience having both business students and humanities students work together on a play. So that was a nice interdisciplinary experience from, yeah,
Oh, I
kind of that
yeah,
one.
I very much like that. I very much like that. I've had very few of the students go to of mine and go into the, I mean, a reasonable percentage go into the field of arts and theatre and acting and film, but most go into other places. So, so it's sort of interdisciplinary in terms of what their ambitions are. But it's very nice when I meet them afterwards and they say, okay, this is how, you know, like all of us, you know, we experience drama, and if we've, it's hard to forget it. You know, they say, well, it's helped me to always question things. It helps me to, you know, see things sideways. It also helps me to see the funny side of stuff. It helps me to, you know, if I don't feel comfortable in the environment, knowing that I've been in an uncomfortable environment makes me feel less mad. So all of these things, of course, are sort of transferable to other fields, and I think that's the power of this thing that we're working with, isn't it?
And I think the fact that the literacy students still stuck with doing the whole project, I think the theater was what got them, and not the business part. So yeah.
But it's nice. I like this. You know, when you're writing, you can mix these things in, and you can have different, you know, whether you do that again the same differently or not is, but you know, it's good to try, and put these things and put these things out there as well. You know, let them be resources for other people and see if they fall down or if they're useful. You know, I've started doing now making one into a radio play to see if that helps, you know, teachers to for it to be listened to. So, you know, I'm still playing around. And yeah.
So I guess we're probably coming slowly to wrap up this interview. It's been really insightful to be talking with you. And yeah, also just on a side note, when you write your own adaptation of Shakespeare, you learn a lot. I mean, I definitely learned a lot about money lending in Venice when I did my adaptation of The Merchant of Venice.
Right,
So
sure,
there
yeah.
was the whole historical background and all these kind of religious implications and whatnot. But yeah, that's
Yes.
for the person who does the writing.
Yeah.
But I hope that also my students got, well, something out of it. I think at least they got the fun of doing theater that in that case.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, it was really really instructive talking to you. And as you said, kind of things led to one another. Any do you have any specific plans or any next play you're going to adapt?
You know, I'm gonna carry on doing them. I think that well, I've just finished writing Cymbeline. Now that's a crazy one. And
Also one of the less popular, I guess.
one of the less popular again is on that list. And also, and I'm just starting. I'm sort of halfway through King Lear, which is like on the other list, for the most popular. And that's one that I knew very little of at the beginning, and I'm now understanding why it is so popular and so relevant. I'm also thinking and starting to get a theatre company of some of my graduate students together to try and perform these. And you know, and as long as it, you know, it keeps popping up as something that's got my interest. It's kept my interest now for 6 or 7 years as material. So as long as it does that, I'll keep going with it. And if people come back to me or want to know more, then I'm, as you can tell, I'm kind of enthusiastic about it, like speaking to you. It's just been, and thank you for this. This has been, you know, for all of the work you're doing and the podcast, a wonderful, been a privilege to be a guest on. So thank you so much.
Thank you for being on the show. And we'll do you have a website or should people just Google the names of your plays if they want to find them?
I can send you the website is there's Alphabet Publishing.
The publishing.
Alphabet Publishing Silly Shakespeare, and then they'll pop up, and you know, they're available at various different places, so if people really want them, they can go from there.
Okay, all right. Thanks a lot.